Hello, and welcome to a special episode of Soundtrack Alley. Today I've got Sharone Farber on with me as I interview her about her career in not only film music, but television and the concert scene. We'll talk about some of her thoughts on the music industry and how composing works in her life. I'll also be playing some special music on the show as well. All today on Soundtrack Alley. Hello, I am Randy Andrews, and today I'm interviewing Sharone Farber, who has worked on projects like The Young and the Restless, and some work on Batman, the animated series, as well as multiple concert projects. So now, let's get into the interview. I'm here with Sharone Farber, international film composer, who has composed music for a concert as well as multiple film projects. Sharon, it's nice to have you with me.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yeah. So the first question that I have for you is, what started your career in composing?
I come from a very musical family. My parents on my mom's side always played. My grandfather played guitar. My grandmother played mandolin, and they used to have these concerts for us when we came over to visit. And I have an uncle who is very well known in Israel as probably one of Israel's most prolific and celebrated songwriters. So there was always music in the family, and I started playing piano when I was 7. And then I went to this art high school, who's like the best art high school in Israel, which is very hard to get in. And I got in, which was wonderful. And I spent 4 years in high school, majoring in piano performance, but also, of course, you know, having everything from music theory, harmony, counterpoint, and it's extremely high level. So when I got out of high school, I had a lot of wonderful knowledge of everything that is music. But I wasn't into film music at the time, not yet. When I was 17, about 17, I mean, I always played and from the ear and improvised, but started to really write was probably between 15 and 17. I wrote some music for choreography, and it won the first place in a competition. And that kind of started, you know, it was so much, there was so much creativity, and I enjoyed the process so much that I started more, and I wrote some music for theater, and that's how I started.
That's really nice. It's neat that you started with a choreography piece.
Yes, and I've had the pleasure of writing for choreography since then a few times, and it's a wonderful experience, you know, because the music comes first usually, and then they basically dance to your music. While in film and in TV, it's the other way around. First, the film is being made and edited, and the composer comes along. Usually, even if we do read the script and maybe see dailies, the most of the composing is really in post-production when the film is almost ready, sometimes completely locked, sometimes it's not totally locked yet. But that's when we start the process. I mean, again, we might have read a script and we might have had all kinds of discussions with the director about what he or she envisioned. But I think the actual writing comes for us pretty much at the end, while when you do choreography, it's the other way around. So, you know, I do a lot of different projects. I do films, I do TV, I do concert music, I do choral music, because everything is unique. And in everything, there's an opportunity to do something new that I haven't done before, because every film is different. Every piece of commission is different. I just got commissioned by the National Children's Chorus, which is a wonderful national orchestra. I'm sorry, choir. They start at 5 up to 20.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, they're amazing. So this commission is for the top ensemble, which is kids that are basically professional singers from the age of 12 to 20. So we're going to have a premiere here in Los Angeles, which will probably have about 80 kids singing,
wow,
and a premiere at Lincoln Center, which will probably have about 140. So I have to start writing. but before that, I have to finish some other projects. So I'm very excited about this.
That's really fantastic. So the next question I had was, studying at Boston Berklee College of Music, mm-hmm, that had to be quite an accomplishment. So what do you enjoy most, writing for film or like the concert stage?
So there's two different questions here. The Berklee experience was wonderful. I did a scholarship tour. When they did a scholarship tour around Europe, they came to Israel. I'm originally from Israel. And they had auditions over there. And I won a scholarship to go. My plan was to go for 1 year to have a film scoring diploma and go back to Israel. But when I just loved it so much that within a few days, I switched to a degree. And after a while, I switched to dual major because I loved both the concert world and the film scoring world. And I graduated with, you know, degrees in both majors, which was wonderful. And I was also able to do it in a very short time, in 6 semesters instead of 10, because I had so much previous knowledge from Israel. What happened was that after Berklee, I won the internship with the Academy of TV Arts and Sciences, which is an organization that gives the Emmys. And I spent 2 months. I spent 2 months with Jonathan Wolf, that was doing Seinfeld at the time, and Alf Clausen, who still does The Simpsons. And I just loved it. And Jonathan asked me who I wanted to meet at the end of the internship. And I said, Shirley Walker. So for those who don't know who she was the pioneer for women composers. She was just wonderful. She did a Batman and Superman TV series for Warner Brothers at the time. And she just took me under her wings. And I started orchestrating for her and then writing for the show. And I was 2 months in LA, and I was going from Warner Brothers to Paramount to Sony with full orchestra. It was just wonderful, wonderful experience. And I was with her for about a year, and then I started my individual career. And for your question, what do I love more? I was doing film music. And then in 2002, I don't know if you remember, but there was a Jewish journalist named Daniel Pearl, who was kidnapped and murdered in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, I'm sorry. And he was working for the Wall Street Journal. It was a big, big thing. And his dad is a friend of mine. So I was so devastated from what happened that I composed a piece, a cappella, only singers, based on a Hebrew song that I loved. I just recorded it with friends, singers, and sent it as a gift to Judea Pearl, who, you know, was moved to tears. And then it sat in the drawer for a while until a wonderful composer named Paul Chihara told me to send it to the LA Master Choral. And I got, you know, a call the next day that they're going to be premiering it at the opening season concert. So I was sitting with the audience 3,000 people in the audience while they're playing Britten and Schubert and, you know, and Verdi and myself, Farber. And it was because the piece was so emotional. At the end of the piece, there was this complete silence for like maybe 30 seconds until people started clapping. And it was such a deep experience that I realized that my calling is not only to do music when I am serving a project, a director. I love doing it. I love there's something so special when you see how your music can elevate a scene, a film, but there's something very, very special about just having an audience sit in a concert hall and listen to your music without looking at something, just through, you know, what they hear. Mm-hmm. It's a profound experience to, you know, to experience that as a composer and to see that how impactful music, how much power music has. It works on our deepest, deepest level of subconscious. After that experience, I decided that my career will be spent in both media, three mediums, which is film, TV, and the concert world, without limitation on the concert world, because I write music for orchestras, I write music for choral groups, I write art songs, I write small chamber pieces, you know, string quartets, all kinds of things. And I think one feeds the other. You know, it's wonderful to do this and wonderful to do this. And I just finished a film that is called Azimuth, which is a wonderful film by a director named Mike Burson. And it was such a wonderful collaboration to do that. But on the other hand, I'm so excited because I'm going to Seattle for my cello concerto for four performances, three with a chamber orchestra and one with a 90-piece orchestra, the Whatcom Symphony, which I have extended my music to include such a big orchestra. And I'm so looking forward to it. Chamber orchestra is called Northwest Symphony, Sinfonietta. And it's just wonderful. To finish this, I'm going to be starting a film, a documentary film very soon, and just finish it. And I'm go. I mean, it's just like, it's such a wonderful experience, you know, to do different things.
Yeah, that's really fantastic. Now, here's a question that I've asked a lot of composers. If you had a dream job of composing any project for, say, a major film or a television project, from the past or even from the present, what would it be and why?
In the film world, I would say something like Wonder Woman for a few reasons. A, because I think the film, which is, I think it's a wonderful film, was and is an inspiration to others all over the world. B, you can really express a lot when you have such a large orchestra and you can have a choir and you can basically have almost whatever you want. So they create from a creative side, you're very free. Although, of course, you are constantly in communication with the director and the director has to approve everything. But you have an opportunity. You're not limited in any way in regards to, oh, you know, I want a 60-piece orchestra or 80 or 100-piece orchestra and I can only have 10 musicians and the rest I have to be doing at my computer. It's limitations that do not exist in a bigger budget films. TV show, something like Hulu's Taboo, Game of Thrones, X-Files, you know, things like that that have we composers usually like the dark side more than the comedic side.
Yeah.
Because there's just more, I think, more way for me at least to express feelings and tension and things like that.
More depth.
So I would probably More depth. There's I think it's very hard to score comedies, and I've done a few, and it's a different process, but not different process, but different frame of mind. Mm-hmm. So I would say something like that, and of course I would love to have my concert music played by, you know, the Los Angeles Philharmonic, the New York Philharmonic, the Berlin Philharmonic, you know, big orchestras with some wonderful soloists. Like my concerto now is going to be played by a wonderful cellist named Amit Pellid, who plays the cello of Pablo Casals, who was one of the most celebrated cellists ever. And when he died at the age of 93, his widow gave his cello to Amit, and he's now playing on this very, very special cello my music. And it's just it's you know, you never know where you're gonna go. You have to be open to opportunities, because when I was commissioned to write this piece by a cellist named Ruslan Buryukov and the Glendon Philharmonic, at the beginning I said no. I said I have no time to do it. And he convinced me, and the piece is written based on a remarkable life story of a Holocaust survivor named Kurt Lowens, mm-hmm. who saved a lot of children during the Holocaust, and two American pilots, and just really a remarkable man. You know, it was just such an amazing experience to meet him and to become his friend. He unfortunately died on May 8th, but I promised him that his legacy will keep on living, you know, way after I'm gone through my music, hopefully.
Well, that's the nice thing about music, is that you can appreciate it, even if it was written 400 yeah. years ago. You mm-hmm. can appreciate that same music and mm-hmm. really know that it can actually reach you on a deep level.
Yeah.
Deeper and this than piece some is, things.
And this piece, especially because it also has narration in it, that he narrated. He was also a very celebrated actor. Wow. So we did it at the Saban Theater here in Beverly Hills. He was the narrator of his own story, and it was remarkable. And the narration was written by myself and Richard Steller and Beth Wernick. And it was just an amazing experience to do this.
That's really good. So you mentioned a few opportunities that you've appreciated for composing. What really stands out in your mind as like one specific time that you've really had an opportunity to work with someone and it really like changed your career?
I don't know if there's something specific that changed my career. I think that every opportunity, when you take on an opportunity, the main thing is to do it with all of your heart. I'm very keen of giving my all to every project I work on. If it's small, if it's big, my name is on it. I want to be proud of every note that comes out of my hands. So I don't know if there's one thing that changed my career. I think many things changed my career, because one led to the other. Shirley Walker definitely opened a lot of doors for me. Jonathan Wolf, by introducing me to Shirley and by having me in his studio for 2 months to observe how things work. You know, I've learned so much from him and from Alf, who does that every week with an orchestra. And that opportunity with Shirley, through her music editor at the time, Virginia Ellsworth, Virginia brought me to an editor who was working on a film for Showtime, and she introduced me, Robin Katz, and she introduced me to the director, Robert Munich, who was working on a film. So, you know, so he took me to score his film, and then I did another. I mean, every opportunity brings another opportunity. I never thought it from this, in my concert world, from this concerto, it's going to be so amazing and go on and on and on and on. Now I know that it will. But when I wrote it, you know, it was like, okay, I'm going to write a concerto because this man is so inspiring and I want to honor him. And you never know where opportunities bring you, as long as if you say yes, say it with all of your heart and put all of your might into it. Otherwise, don't do it. I don't do half a job. I don't want to do half a job, you know, because that's not fair to the person who invited the work from you. It's not fair to you because you're not going to do your best. I think that opportunities are every opportunity you can gain something from every opportunity. If you decided to take it on, sometimes you don't want to take something on because it doesn't suit you, which is okay too. We don't have to say yes to everything. But if we do say yes, then it needs to be a real yes and not just, oh, yeah, you know what? I have 3 weeks off, I'll take this. It's just, you know, do it if you really believe that this is something that you want to do.
Well, that's a good way of looking at a change in circumstance or a change in, like you said, an opportunity to have another project. One thing I like to ask different composers is, who is your favorite composer and why?
You know, I've been asked that so many times, and I'm sure this is a favorite question, but it's a very hard question to answer.
I imagine it is, because I asked it to someone that Elik Alvarez and Freddy Schoenfeld. Mm-hmm. I asked them that question, and Elik made a very good point. He said, well, my favorite this week is mm-hmm. this composer, and it happened to be John Powell at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it may change next week. I may have someone new that I really like. So
yeah,
I can see why that would be a hard question, and I may alter the way I ask it so that way it can be personalized to that individual.
Right.
And I didn't switch
it
on the spot.
It goes from Bach and you know, Mozart and Beethoven and I don't know, Debussy that I love, Ravel, from Stravinsky and Liszt and Rachmaninoff and Brahms you know, contemporary composers up to, you know, John Williams, which I think is brilliant, and Thomas Newman and James Newton Howard and Danny Elfman, and you know, and
the list could go on.
Yeah, John Powell is wonderful. Don Davis is wonderful. I mean, there's so many wonderful mm-hmm. composers. Bruce Broughton. I mean, there's so many wonderful composers. And some of the old ones, Elmer Bernstein, of course, you know, and I mean, Bernard Herrmann. It's intense, you know. There's just so many, and each, and you know, today composers and other women who do it today who are wonderful composers. It's very, very hard to actually say this is my favorite composer, because. Mm-hmm. You, by listening, you are influenced by everything. There are also, you know, I tell young composers that they shouldn't, or they, there's no point in trying to write like, oh, I can write like John Williams. Well, we already have John Williams.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I can write like, I don't know, Thomas Newman. Well, we already have Thomas Newman. You know, they're well and alive, and we wish them all the best. Think about where you came from mm-hmm. and what is your upbringing that will make you different, will give you a personal voice. You know, I come from Israel, which is in the heat of the Middle East, this tiny country surrounded by a lot of Arab countries. But it's also a place of so many people who came from all over the world. So the music of Israel is very prolific and very big in terms of the influences that you have. So I grew up on playing Bach and playing, you know, Beethoven and Mozart and Chopin. But I also listen to the radio and friends who are playing, and my grandparents who, you know, And a few years ago, I scored a film called The Dove Flyer, which takes place in Iraq. The whole film takes place in the 1950s in Iraq. The music supervisor of the film also introduced me to Alex Claude, introduced me to an instrument that I didn't know. I knew most of the Middle Eastern instrument, but that I didn't know. It's called Comanche, or Comanche. So I found a Comanche player here in Los Angeles and brought him in, and he played Comanche, and I had oud, and I had ney flute, and I had duduk, and I had dumbak, and my husband plays dumbak. I mean, and it was a combination of the sounds of the Middle East with some orchestral sounding, more Western music, which I love doing. You know, and I even sang on it. And I remember when I was at my engineer's, we record some vocals or in Adar, and I said, and he said, "How do you do this thing?" I said, "What?" He said, "Like, you know, I'll show that it goes like, ah." He's like, "How do you do that?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "How do you do this with with your voice?" I said, "This is so natural for me because this is part of what I heard, you know, when I grew up." So it was very easy for me to do something like that, to use this instrument, because it was always in the background. I could always hear it, you know. You open turn on the radio, and there's, you know, this and this and this. So it's a combination of playing classical music, listening to classical music and concert music, and on the other hand, you know, being exposed to all these wonderful, wonderful flavors of music that come from all over the world, you know, from Iraq and Yemen you know, I don't know, Syria and Turkey and Russia and Ethiopia, because Israel is like it's like a combination of all this, and it's wonderful.
I've never been to that part of the world, but I know some friends who actually recently visited Israel, and it's just it's a really it's kind of a heightened sense of civilization, because it's kind of where a lot of things began, and that I mean it just it's a very well way of having that appreciation for history. And
It's a fascinating place.
yeah.
I get to go, and you'll see also the truth, because sometimes Israel is not portrayed in the right light, and it makes me very sad, because I know where I came from, and you know, I go there many, many times, and Israelis, Jews, Christians, Muslims, Hindus, you go to Jerusalem and you hear everything. You hear Hebrew and you hear English and you hear Arabic and you hear Amharic, which is Ethiopian. You hear Russian and you hear Portuguese. You hear so many languages. And everybody gets along, except for those who don't. But, you know, you see the truth if you go. So I hope that everybody gets to experience this beauty of flavors and tastes and music and unity. It's beautiful.
So one other question I had. Now, how was it being nominated for like 4 times for the Emmy regarding The Young and the Restless? Or are you still writing for that program, or?
I was very lucky through my former manager Beth Wernick to meet a wonderful man named Paul Antonelli, who was a music supervisor, and he was working on a soap opera, I think called Passion, and you know, the way As the World Turns. And he asked for some of my music when I met him, and I sent it to him, and he really liked it. So he started bringing me on all the shows that he was working on, until he got it to The Young and the Restless, and he brought me on. And he and R.C. Cates are the music supervisors, although now there's a little bit of change there. And I just started writing for the show and was very happy when we got nominated 4 times. It's a wonderful experience. I'm still writing for the show. what's good about it is that because the music supervisors are also composers, they take a lot of the load on them. So it gives me time to do that and other projects. Time-wise, it's wonderful. And there are wonderful people that I'm so happy that I got to know. Yeah, that's really great people. I'm very, very lucky. And I thank Beth Warnick for that. She's great. She's amazing.
Yeah. So out of the different directors that you've worked with, who is your favorite that you've worked with, say, the most?
Again, you know, I wouldn't say a favorite because I just finished Mike Burston's film. It was a wonderful collaboration. Mike is also a musician, a great musician himself. So we spoke the same language. It was very easy to score the film. His comments were right on. There were small little changes, but it was great. Gloria Greenfield, I'm going to do her third film now, and she doesn't even put temp track. I don't know if people know what temp track is, mm-hmm. but it's a temporary track that editors and filmmakers put in order to give a sense to the editing and to show the composer what their idea is. But Gloria never did that. She was just like an open slate, and I was able to come up with what I wanted to do there. And it was a great collaboration. I mean, there's so many, you know.
I think that's a brilliant way of looking at it too, is if they give you, if like the director gives you that open freedom to be able to design the soundtrack or the score the way you want it to, then it makes it a more personal project instead of having to rely on something that's already made.
Right, but sometimes temp tracks could help to present the director's vision to the composer. Sometimes it's a little problematic because a film can take a long time and a director can become very attached to the temp track. And that's sometimes hard to let go of. And I really understand that because you get so used to something that it's hard to let go of. But most directors are open to doing something different, but it gives us a little bit of understanding of what they are looking for. So it depends. It could be very helpful and it could be problematic sometimes. I haven't had any problem. Well, there was one, which eventually I had to quit the film because it was impossible. But almost in all my experiences, it worked out well. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it had a temp track or if it hadn't. So it's I think how do I say it? Scoring a film is a very collaborative process, very collaborative with the director, and when you come from a respectful place and understand that a film can take sometimes a few years, it's a very tough process. I have so much respect for filmmakers because at the end, they've been pregnant, I can say, with this project, right? Yeah. With this child. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a few months, sometimes a few years. I scored a film that took 6 years to make. So you're with this film, with your baby, with your project for so long, and then someone else needs to dress it. You know, it's in the air, you know, you gave birth, and now someone else needs to dress it, and it might not be your taste. So it's very hard. I think sometimes, especially if you're not musically knowledgeable, it's very scary to hand your project to a composer. So I always encourage filmmakers to speak in a more common languages, common for both of us. What do you need here? Is it, what do you want to portray? Is it a sad scene? Is it emotional? Is it nostalgic? Is it happy? Is it small? Is it big? Also, of course, the visual will guide you many times.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a small setting or it's a lush big setting, or is it with dialogue? Is there no dialogue? How much sound effect? I mean, there's so many elements that you take into consideration. But I think it's very, very important to come from a very respectful point of view and to leave the ego outside of the equation, because you're there to bring the vision of the director to life. And if he or she are not feeling the music that you wrote, it's not anything personal. It might feel like that, but it's not. They just want to feel that what they want to portray is being executed by you in a musical way. And you know what, if that happens and a director says, this doesn't work for me, let's try again, I put aside the music that I've written because I know it will work on another project. Mm. So I never trash anything. And it happened a few times, you know, that, okay, this thing didn't work, I'm putting it here, and then I make it work for another project because hopefully it's still good.
Go ahead. I understand it's a really delicate process to have to get that communication between the director as well as the composer, and say the director is taking a long time making the film, and then all of a sudden he calls you in and you've got what, maybe 3 weeks to get the composition ready.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be very stressful. So I get that.
Yeah, it is very stressful. And that's why you want to establish great working relationships from the beginning, and not, the composer needs to be a problem solver, not a problem maker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many problems sometimes, and you know, with the editing and the color correction and the dialogue and the looping group. And I don't want to add more stress to the director. Mm-hmm. I want him to know, him or her, to know that this part is taken care of. Don't worry, it's going to be great. It's going to be fine. We're going to make it, you know, the best that we can. So that's what I try to do. And hopefully, you know, I succeed most of the times.
Yeah, that's a really, really excellent explanation of how that collaborative relationship works between a director and a composer. A couple more questions I have for you. This one is kind of a two-part question. How did you feel about the Women's International Film and Television Showcase presenting you the Music Award in 2012? I know that's been a few years ago, but how did you feel about that?
I was extremely honored, and I still am, because it's also called the Visionary Award, which means they feel that I inspire other women to go for it. I mean, this is not an easy, you know, profession to choose. And although we have come a long way in women who compose music, we are still 2% of male composers.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of awareness now, and there's much more openness. So I feel very blessed to be living my life in a time period when I'm able to, you know, to do what I love and make that my profession, my career, my income, you know, not just as a hobby or something. This is what I do, and this is what I've been doing for many years. And I think for me, it's very important to me to inspire the next generation of women who want to do it, because I meet a lot of young composers. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm that old, but, you know, now people who are just starting out, and you know, they come to me very enthusiastic and they want to do it, and they're going to be film composers. And then I meet them a few years later, and what are you doing? Oh no, I don't do this anymore. Why? It's just too hard. And I understand also I think it's a matter of the way you are brought up. Some women are brought up still in this age to believe that their job is to raise the kids, you know, take care of the home. So to break free of that is extremely hard. And I understand that. Music, you're going to make music.
There's no money in it.
So it's a cultural thing that slowly has been broken up. Not enough, but we are in such a better place than, you know, a few years ago even. So I try to inspire. I try to show young women that it is possible if you are willing to go for it and not quit. And it's hard for everyone, for women and men. You were just specifically talking about the women in Showcase Award. So I was referring to more to women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's hard for anyone who's just starting out. Mm-hmm. It's not what it used to be. It used to be, you know, years ago that when you came to town, you know, a major composer would just take you under the wings and mentor you. I've had that, luckily, with Shirley Walker for about a year, which was the best school I've ever had. You know, Berkeley was wonderful, but there's nothing like actually doing the work and seeing how it works in a professional atmosphere. So, you know, as a young composer, not even as young composers, I know established composers who are frustrated because of this didn't happen and this didn't happen. And it's the emotional business of this business is not easy to take, and you have to grow a thick skin and know your worth, which is sometimes hard to do because what happens at the beginning, and I sinned in this, you compare yourself to others. And of course, you'll never compare yourself to those that haven't done what you've done yet. You'll compare yourself to, oh, he or she went to school with me and he or she are doing this and this and this and this. And you have to look at yourself from others' eyes sometimes and say, hey, you know what? This is my path. And would I even like to be someone else? Probably people say, I would like to have his or her position in life, but I don't want to be someone else. Well, it doesn't work like that, you know?
Yeah.
You are who you are. Mm-hmm. You have your own path. The path is going to be, it's going to contain successes, and it's going to contain periods where you are going to perceive as failure, but they are never failures. Everything that we do in life is an opportunity to grow and to learn. So if you had something that didn't work, sometimes it's so hurtful and it's horrible and you don't know how you're going to get up in the morning and you're crushed by this thing, whatever it is. But you know what? You get up in the morning, you're still alive, and you say, you know, what have I learned from this opportunity to grow? Was it hard? It was horrifying. Did it crush me? Yes. From all of my life? No, in 10 years or 5 years or a year, I'm not even gonna, you know, treat this as something that crushed me, but as something that I learned from and I grew up and grew more mature.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it goes for every profession, by the way. The creative profession is sometimes more, it's harder sometimes to deal with because we are always exposed to criticism.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter, you know, even the biggest composer, someone can, you know, people can say, oh, he's a good composer, she's a good composer, but their latest score is awful. What were they thinking? First, it's not always our thinking. Sometimes it's the director's thinking, but people mm-hmm. don't know that. And second, you know, I don't feel connected to everything I hear. You know, some pieces might not speak to me, but I still know how hard the process of creating is. So I come from a respect to everyone who is willing to put their soul on a piece of paper with dots and put it out there in the world, it's so hard. And know that you might be criticized and you might be looked upon like you don't know what you're doing. But you know what? Again, this can go with almost every creative profession. When you write a book, when you design a dress, when you design a shoe, when you, you know, produce a film, when you on the stage as a play, you know, as a player, as an actor, as an actress, it's hard. You know, everybody started somewhere. John Williams started somewhere, mm-hmm. and he took the first play, the first step to do this. So I think that if we understand that we have to write from the heart, we have to write from where we are, and know that some people are going to like it, some people are not going to like it, some people wouldn't care, you know, that or that. We have to be true to ourselves. And it takes a long time to get into this position and not be affected by what other people are saying about you or your compositions or your hairstyle, whatever. It takes a while, and it's a process. But when you get to this stage in life, I think you get a little bit more immune to all the criticism, and you say, okay, this is who I am, and if this person doesn't want to work with me because he or she are not feeling a connection, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Others, I will work with those who do feel a connection to me, to my music, to my personality, to whatever. So it's a process. And I think when you're starting out, it's one of the hardest process to deal with.
I imagine. And there are so many various composers that even have, you know, when you look at your own life, you probably have challenges that you face even if it's outside of the composing world. Zack Snyder had his daughter
That's horrible.
Commit suicide, but it probably affected how the composer, who was Hans Zimmer, would compose some of his music, because he would be affected by either a change in director and saying, oh, I've got to take this in a new direction. So,
yeah. And, you know, they say that you don't really made it big in Hollywood until your score is thrown out at least once. Yeah. So, yeah.
I've heard that before.
Almost every big composer had that happen to him or her. So it's okay. It happens. Sometimes, you know, they do test screening and the film doesn't work. So the first thing they blame, of course, it's the music. Mm-hmm. Just part of life, and life is—it's too short.
Yeah, I agree. Take consideration
what everyone says on social media or on, you know, it's we live in a world where there is no privacy anymore. Everything is in the open, mm-hmm. so everyone can sit and hide behind a keyboard with a fake name or not with a fake name and just trash people. I think it's horrible.
Yeah.
I think it's such a, we've come to a point where people don't care what they do to people. And I think it's horrible, you know, when on everything, but let's take a creative field and mm-hmm. someone just, let's say, just compose a piece and put it out there or wrote a book and people trash it. They don't realize what they're doing. And the most annoying thing is that when it comes from people who have never taken the risk of putting anything out there in the world to be criticized. So, you know, I think when people trash someone and criticize, they just have to put themselves in the other person's shoe. Mm-hmm. And I tell my students, you know, I give a lot of master classes, and one of the things that I say always is that be happy for the successes of your friends, even if you envy or jealous, leave the jealousy aside and be happy, because when you get your film and your success, you want them to be happy for you. So if you are not able to be happy for your friends, why would they be happy for you when you get your chance? And it's a very hard thing to do, but we all strive for the same thing. We want the success. We want to be acknowledged by our peers. We want to feel that our work means something. We want to feel that we're doing a great job. So, and we also want to feel loved and accepted. And so if you can't give that to someone else, why would someone else give it to you?
That's an excellent way of putting that. Just, let's see, I only have two other questions for you. First of all, what current projects are you working on, or ones that you can tell me about?
Okay, so as I said, I finished a film that is called Azimuth. It's a feature that's probably going to be out sometimes in December, I think, maybe. By Mike Burston, director. So I finished that. I'm going to start on a documentary by Gloria Greenfield. I'm about to start a commission from the National Children's Chorus. As I said, it's going to be premiered in December 16th at Lincoln Center. I'm finishing up proofreading of my concerto for the performances in Seattle. Bellingham. I'm also the music director of a very, very big Reformed temple here called Temple of the Arts, which is basically kind of Hollywood temple. We have about 1,800 people coming for the Jewish High Holidays, and it's a big, big production. I have wonderful singers. I have 8 singers. Most of them do the biggest films, and the LA Master Chorale and LA Opera. I have a wonderful quartet, and I have 2 wonderful cantors, Alicia Pierce and Jordan Bennett, and the rabbi, David Baron. I mean, it's a huge production. I have about 15 people under my command, and I always write a lot of material for this original, and so I have that on top of it.
Wow.
I'm also producing a memorial evening for Kurt Lawrence, the Holocaust survivor that that we've lost recently, that I wrote my concerto about. So that will be a big event as well. And there's a TV series that I might be doing. There's a project called Jeremiah Jones and the Kingdom of Nero, which is a wonderful project that I'm hoping will happen in the next year, because it's a big project with Ariana Eisenberg, the producer. And there's a few other things that are cooking right now. Let's see, the X Gene Project and Pendragon, which is a TV series that I'm hoping that's going to happen soon. And my agent is working on other things, other issues, Jeff Kaufman, and I have an agent in Israel that is now working on a few things. And there's an orchestra in Israel that is very interested. I won't say it as yet, because until it's done, they want to take my concerto for concerts in Israel, and they then take it to Poland and Germany and Austria and maybe a few other European countries. So, you know, it's very exciting. I just got a call for another documentaries. I love doing documentaries. I think they're so real, and just like this whole new wave of documentary music and documentary films that are now very getting a new wave. So I love doing that. So I just finished speaking to her, and hopefully that will happen as well. So there's a lot of, and that's only until December. We'll see.
And so you've got a lot on your plate, and you have a lot that is coming up, or things that you're working on, or you put aside and say, okay, I'll work on this later. And
yes,
that's just really impressive. And really, you're a phenomenal composer. Even the music that's on your actual website, which is SharonFarber.com, right? Is
that right? Yeah, Sharon with no E.
Okay.
Just Sharon.
Yeah. And it's Just really brilliant. When I went to that website twice, or no, I went to it at least four times already. But it's a really fantastic piece that plays right off at the start, and it actually relaxes you so much. So I just want to commend you for that.
This is from a film that I did called When Nietzsche Wept, which is a book that I read when I was about 17. And I thought to myself, wow, I'm hoping that one day someone will make a film out of it. And sure enough, The Power of Your Subconscious Mind, someone did make a film out of it. His name is Pinchas Perry. And I scored a movie, and we went to Bulgaria and we recorded with the Bulgarian Symphony Orchestra, which was a wonderful experience. Definitely that, I love working with orchestras. So you never know when something happens. My website is not updated. Last year I did a film called Children of the Fall, which is a thriller horror, which I love doing. The director is Eitan Gaffney, and it's probably going to be released soon. So I have to put music from there
Oh,
on
yeah.
that as well, because that was very action oriented and very big scary stuff, which I loved. Last year, August of last year, the Women Alliance of Women Composers, Film Composers. Produced a film here, Laura Kaplan, who's a wonderful composer. They produced a film here. They produced a concert here, downtown LA, and featured about 20 women composers, which was with a 52-piece orchestra, just wonderful. So I did a combination of film, music from this horror film and thriller, and I took music from the film in Iraq, and I brought in two. A wonderful ethnic music instrumentalist. One played Comanche, and one played. It just that, as I said, and the audience loved it because it was different, because it brought a different flavor that I was able to bring. I just enjoy everything I do, I
That's
must say.
good. That's good.
I enjoy every project I do, and it's really. If someone told me when I was in when I was, I don't know, 17, that I will be living and working in Hollywood and write music for films and TV and concerts, and I probably wouldn't have believed it. And
But here you are.
but here I am.
Yeah.
So it means that if we are committed and determined to reach out, and we do not listen to the naysayers, we can achieve our dreams, and I just want to inspire every young composer, man, a woman, to not quit when it gets hard, because it will get hard. And what you do, you build on your little successes, and you say, you know what, today was so hard, but 2 months ago I had this wonderful experience with this project. And probably in a few days or a few months, I will have another great experience. And somehow you understand that this is only a part of the process, and it just makes you a better composer, better person, a better someone with better understanding of not only the process of composing and communicating with other people and filmmakers, but also, in life. Life, because if you can communicate in a positive and good way with people who are kind of your bosses, then you'll be probably able to communicate well with everybody, as long as you come from a respectful place.
Yeah,
Give
that's
others what you treat others like you want to be treated. I
exactly.
believe in that. Yeah.
That's excellent. Well, Sharon, it's been such a pleasure to have you on my show.
Andrew,
Yeah.
it's been a pleasure. Thank you for helping spread the word about film music. I think it's important that people understand that there's this whole beautiful process behind the fact that you go to a movie and there's music there,
Yeah.
It's a whole process, and it's a great one.
Yeah. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Thank you for taking the time out of your enormously busy schedule for having this interview. So,
Thank you so much, and we will be in touch, and good luck with everything.
all right, thank you so much. Bye
You
bye.
too. Bye-bye.
So now I'll be getting into some of the music that Sharon has shared with me. I'll be playing this music as one whole album cue. You'll be able to hear along with me the various differences in style that Sharon Farber has developed. As these are brought out, they're not in complete order according to movie or album, but the way the album has been combined. It fits very well. Here's how the album is comprised. First, we have Flight of Redemption, a very dramatic piece of music highlighting the sounds of the orchestra, giving us a dramatic entrance to the album. Second, we have Lewis's Confession, which is presented with great heartbreak and deeply emotional in the piece of music. Third, there's music from Oceans, the album, which you can find on iTunes and Amazon. The piece is entitled War of the Deep, giving us this dramatic yet very ethereal composition, providing drama for various creatures of the deep ocean. Number four, we have music from Cinematic Stories, the album, providing a very Middle Eastern orchestral presentation of the melodies and woodwinds. The piece is called Deep Desert. Fifth, music from the movie When Nietzsche Wept. The piece is entitled Looking for Nietzsche and its dramatic search. Gives us the true drama for this film cue, and we'll hear a few more from this very movie score. Sixth, we have Incitement to Murder. It gives us this dramatic action for this cue. Seventh is another cue from the Oceans album called Dolphins of the Blue. Eighth, which is a dramatic comedy known as Pongo, and it really illustrates the fun nature of this cue from Sharon. Ninth, the next piece is from When Nietzsche Wept, called Freedom. 10th, another piece from the Oceans album called Tough Seas. These from this album are hauntingly beautiful. The 11th piece is known from the Dove Flyer called Hanging. Then from the same album, the 12th cue that we'll be playing is called Exodus from that same album. The 13th piece is known as Times of Hatred, which is more of a thriller and drama piece. 14th, we have another piece from When Nietzsche Wept called Reading. 15th is called Unmasked from Judaphobia, Second Class Citizens. This piece is very Arabian in nature, giving us those wonderful woodwinds and great percussion pieces. And 16 and 17, these last two pieces are from When Nietzsche Wept. This one is called Friends, which illustrates the melodic and poignant themes from the album. And the final piece is called Crazy Bertha, which is chaotic and comedic in nature. These are the last bit of the pieces from the music that Sharon Farber has provided specifically for this podcast. I hope you enjoy them. And when you want, you can look me up on soundtrackla.net, soundtrackla.podbean.com. Check out my Twitter page, which is at RandallAndrews1. And also check out my other podcast that I just started up called the Gen 13 Files. It's also on Podbean. And you can email me for this podcast at soundtrackalley@yahoo.com. And I hope you enjoy this music and happy listening. Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley, the podcast. I hope you take the time to review my podcast on iTunes or even listen to it on Podbean. With your review, it helps me get noticed on iTunes. Thank you so much. Have a good day. Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley Spotlight. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Also, if you want to leave a comment, question, or concern, please email me at soundtrackalley@gmail.com and enjoy looking at my blog at soundtrackalley.com.